This is John Williams. Our friend and third president of these United States, Thomas Jefferson, is on the phone. President Jefferson, welcome back to our little radio show. How are you, sir?
Good day to you, my friend.
By the way, this is a funny segue. We just talked to a guy who bowled a perfect game in 87 seconds. It's the record for the fastest 300 ever rolled. You ever bowl, Thomas Jefferson?
I'm glad to hear that American cultural achievement continues to be the best in the world.
You get that bowl back and boom, you whip it and the pins just pop when you hit it in the perfect pocket. It's really thrilling. You guys would have enjoyed bowling back in your day.
Yeah, no such thing existed in my time. There was a British version of bowls that involved what you would call croquet balls, but it was not nearly the same thing. And we didn't go in for that sort of thing in this, our happy republic, because we wanted to break with the cultural tyranny of England.
So a game that was popular there would be sort of verboten here because that would be seen as too British, eh?
Too British and too upper class. You know, we were trying to create the world's first equalitarian society in which there might be a few poor people and a very few rich people, but the great mass of Americans would be of a middling sort, and we didn't want to go in for aristocratic leisure activity.
So no bowling, probably no golf then either. That's kind of a highfalutin game.
Golfing was just sort of finding its way in Scotland, but no, there was no significant golfing in the United States until long after my death.
Yeah, you guys didn't have a Mar-a-Lago. I mean, you didn't even have any golf courses probably in the United States.
I did go, you know, when president for 8 years between 1801 and 1809, I refused to stay in Washington, D.C. in August and September because the heat was unbearable and the humidity. And back then, before penicillin, the malarial climate of Williamsburg and Norfolk and Washington, D.C. was such that it was really a danger to one's health. So I always went back to Monticello for the months of August and September and refused to stay in the city.
Right, right. Did you have a putting green there? I don't want to dwell on this, but no golf at all, right?
No golf. My joys at Monticello were riding my horses. I sometimes organized games for my grandchildren on the lawn.
Right.
I love to putter in the garden, put my hands in the soil, and see if I could get some seeds from the Lewis and Clark expedition to grow at Monticello, or seeds from Italy.
Hey, did you hear about the Declaration of Independence they found in England? They say it's not in your hand, but it's a handwritten copy of the Declaration from your era. Like maybe one of the founding fathers gave it to this guy. What do you know? What do you think about that?
Well, it's extraordinary if it's true. I'm eager to see it validated by historians. But what happened was that I wrote the Declaration of Independence in June of 1776, and then it was debated in Congress on July 2nd, 3rd, and part of July 4th, 1776. And once it was adopted, with many changes, which I found appalling, but once it was adopted by Congress, it went to a printer in Philadelphia, and copies were printed that very day and distributed. But the copy that you all revere, that's in the National Archives of the United States, an entity that did not exist in my time, that copy, the engraved copy, what you would call a calligraphy copy, that wasn't finished until early August of 1776, and then people came in and signed it sort of now and then. There was no signing ceremony. People just signed when it was convenient for
them.
Well,
in the play 1776, you know, the musical, the Broadway show, they all very ceremoniously came up, said something important, and then signed, that sort of thing.
That never happened, unfortunately. So it was printed immediately. George Washington had it read to his troops almost instantly.
Really?
It circulated in newspapers around the country very quickly. But the famous copy was discovered or was printed weeks later and then signed over the course of a 2 or 3 week period, and people did not make little speeches and so on. It was just a routine sort of signing.
Well, where's the one that you, do we still have your original handwritten one? Did you hand write out a copy, the original?
Yes, my copy exists. It still exists in your time, the draft copy, in which you can see crossings out and things penciled in and so on. That copy continues to exist. But the copy that went to the printer The copy that was passed by the Congress has disappeared. But copies were made by gentlemen, by some of the founding fathers. People didn't always wait for the printed copy. They simply sat down and copied it out, or copied it out from print to send to their distant friends.
Boy, I can't imagine anybody doing that today. Sit there with a great big piece of paper and hand write out the entire Declaration of Independence, and keep the lines even, and I don't suppose they had whiteout back then.
No, and then people had to sharpen their pens. These were quills from geese. So they had a pen knife. They had a knife that literally they used to cut the dull end off of the pen and then sharpen it. And then they had to dip that pen into ink, and it was always spilling and causing smudges and so on. But I was worse than all of the rest, because take a letter. Say if I wrote a letter to John Adams in 1816, not only would I write the draft, but then I would write the letter from the draft, and then I would write a copy for my own files from the letter. Mm. So this was a very tedious process in my era.
It's 1:57. I'm out of time. Well, maybe we'll talk more about this if we find that it's validated. I'm kind of curious what it's worth, too, this old copy of the Declaration. But it's just good to touch bases with you, sir. You are going to visit with us on stage in December of this year. And another president, a guy you don't know, Thomas Jefferson, his name was Teddy Roosevelt, is going to join us at the College of DuPage in August. So we've got a couple of presidential conversations coming back to Chicago.
I always enjoy my conversations with you. And, you know, Chicago in my time was the howling wilderness. So it's always pleasant for me to see how much you've civilized it.
We got bowling alleys and everything. You'll just love it here. In August, Teddy Roosevelt comes to the College of DuPage. And in December, Thomas Jefferson and I make a first-time appearance in Elgin. So we're looking forward to that show, too. Thank you, sir.
We have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the true meaning of the Declaration. I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
That's TJ.